What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast. Back at it again on Monday, June the 8th. We're kind of in the summer. Are we in the summer now? 2020 just feels like one bad dream, so it doesn't even really feel like summer. But we're back at it again. We got a lot going on. We'll piggyback some of the stuff we talked about on Friday with Drew Brees. Roger Goodell got involved. More players got involved. Donald Trump got involved. Semi-predictable as the weekend was going on, how it was all kind of going to play out, at least on social media. The NFL on Monday gave some protocols on how you have to operate within the coronavirus. I'll dive into some of those and how it will just impact the way, you know, a team's facility works. I know some of you guys have never been in a team facility. It could be a little challenging. The NFL, we'll just go around the NFL, some stories. Dalvin Cook's going to hold out. Stuff going on with Iowa football and Kirk Ferentz. And Dabo Sweeney's taking some heat. And we'll kind of touch on it all. And then, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff, is my Instagram handle. My DMs are wide open. Fire a question in there, and you will get it read here on the show. It's the people's show, so I appreciate everyone firing in the DMs. Also, for those of you that haven't done it, go to the Apple iTunes 3 and Out podcast. Leave a review. Greatly appreciate it. A lot of you have done that over the last, in 2020, over the last 6 months, so I tip my hat to you. But let's start with this weekend. And let me piggyback off something I said on Friday. And I have just kind of a motto in life. High-level people do high-level things. It's why I was not going to put Drew Brees 6 feet under. He was not going to lose his locker room. He was not going to be fired from NBC. His resume was way too long to go, yeah, I think he'll figure this out. I think he'll end up on the right side of the ledger. Several days later, he's getting standing ovations on Twitter. Of course. I think the thing we all need to do with Twitter sometimes is just take a deep breath, or social media. Not everything is so emotional in the moment that it's going to ruin people's lives. Now, sometimes it will. You know, I'm not saying that everyone is going to get the same latitude and the same amount of time to respond or to react. Your resume, what does Coward say, your life resume should matter? Like, Drew Brees, if someone shows you who they are, believe them. Like, we've had 15-plus years of seeing who Drew Brees is. I was confident that he would find a way out of it. And now it feels like he's out on top. He's one of the league's spokesmen. He wrote or a tweet or an Instagram at Donald Trump. One thing I think happened this week is when the players, and I know Peter King and Albert Breer wrote about it, is that the players, some of the most famous players, from the Honey Badger to Patrick Mahomes to Michael Thomas, I think Michael Thomas kind of led the charge, and a guy with NFL Media was in charge of it, put together a video, a Black Lives Matter video. It was really powerful. It was really well done. And kind of putting the NFL's feet to the fire. And I think the NFL, like the number one reason Colin Kaepernick got blackballed, and he did get blackballed, like you can't deny it, is because of money. That period when Kaepernick was kneeling, they started losing ratings. And no league cares more about their ratings than the NFL. Because like most of us that are playing the stock market, we only want it to go up, up, and up. And for a year, I guess it might have been kind of two, definitely like a year and a half, the ratings started going down. And right or wrong, they blamed it on Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling. And listen, I've said over and over, I don't care if you kneel. I don't care what you do. I understand it's well documented that they're not kneeling in protest of the military. They're kneeling against police brutality, social injustice. It's clear. We talked about this on Friday. I get that. I would imagine most of you listening get that. There is a percentage of people, though, who don't get it, who don't understand that, and will be turned off by the NFL. We've seen it before. Now, will it be less this time? I don't know. But those people do exist. They are human beings that watch the NFL. And the NFL, what they truly care about, even more than people going to the games, is people sitting on their couch and consuming their product on Thursday night, on Sunday all day, and then on Monday night. That is their number one business goal, is to get you to watch football. and watch it, a lot of it. And they've done a pretty good job. And they think that kneeling, or they did think that kneeling, maybe they still know, forces people to not watch. I'm unfazed by it. I would imagine many people listening, if you're a big football guy, you're unfazed by it. Clearly people were. Roger Goodell had no choice on this one. I'm not trying to diminish the video that he put out, but it was pretty clear where this boat was headed. It was going to be the players who were all kind of coming together pretty universally, especially once Drew Brees kind of pivoted. Everyone was kind of behind him. The Black Lives Matter movement that was really, really powerful all over the country. The peaceful protests all over the place. That the NFL could not be at some divide. And Roger Goodell, which is kind of unfair, he feels like the guy that's anti the players. Really, he's just answering for the owners. Now, I read and heard that the owners didn't even know he was going to make this video. But Goodell is kind of this you know, peon widget used in this whole grand scheme of things to take all the heat off the owners who just want to keep making money. Now, Roger Goodell got out in front of it because the moment players start talking, we're going to kneel, and I think it's pretty, you don't need to be working in the league office to know. I'd imagine the majority of the league is going to be kneeling come week one and potentially for the entire season. The kneeling is going to be all over the league. I expect players or coaches to kneel. A lot of people are going to be kneeling. It's going to be a big, big story. And if the NFL did not actively come out and say that they are going to support it, they are going to be there hand in hand, it would feel like a racial divide between the league's office, which is really the owners, and the players. And they could not have that because Donald's going to be doubling down. This is an election year. He rides this kneeling thing because clearly he thinks, or he knows, to his voting base, check the box, like that's a big thing for them. And he's going to hammer it home that you kneeling, anti-American. Again, I don't think that. People do. And I think sometimes we struggle with, like, are we really looking for diversity of thought, or do we want everyone to think alike? Like, you are allowed in this country to think differently. And if it bothers you, I do get it. Again, does it bother me? I could not give a shit any less. Like, in terms of, I don't correlate the two. But Donald's going to go all in on it. And he's already been tweeting about the kneeling, about taking shots at Roger Goodell. And I think what the NFL needs to do is kind of almost pigeonhole themselves or pivot almost against Donald Trump. And that's kind of what it feels like. I think the NFL would pay a substantial amount of money to get him out of office. Not because the majority of their owners and Roger Goodell, and I'd imagine a lot of players, vote on the right side of the ledger. And it's usually financially based. I'm not giving you like a political science discourse here, but one side likes taxing rich people more than the other side. So if I was making $10, $20, $30 million, or some of these businesses, it's not that complicated why this happens. But Donald Trump has now become a major pain in their ass because he constantly tweets about them when this situation comes up. He constantly interjects himself into this situation. And the NFL did not have a choice once the players and really the George Floyd and everything became what it became, and as it should, to end racial injustice in this society and push for change. Well, the players, they were all not only going to come out pretty heavily as they did, and because it's so easy to communicate now with even guys that you don't play for, they mobilize so fast, and the videos, and then Roger Goodell kind of doubled down. They're against this president now. And this is not your normal president because he's always tweeting. And everything he says becomes a major story. And this is one story that he just won't let die. So the NFL has kind of shown, F you, Donald. We don't care what you think. We're in this to make money. And deep down, we would like to get rid of you. Because right now, you cause us more problems than benefits. I think it's really that simple. The majority of our players are black. Every time that you do this, it feels like it's a fight or you're coming after them, right or wrong. That's how it feels for them. And I give Roger Goodell credit for making that video. Whether you can think it's hollow, whether you can think it's fraudulent, that's up to you. But he had to do it because he had to show that this is not going to be some racial divide. We are on the side of the players. Now, I do think it's going to be a fascinating watch because if the media could choose, and the media that covers the NBA, or I mean the NFL and definitely the NBA, but just as a whole, like we've seen studies done, they are extreme left-wingers. If they could choose, the entire country would be kneeling. Like, if the fans are allowed in the stands come the fall, everyone would have to kneel at the national anthem. But that's not real life. And I think the NFL, while they had to push all their chips into the middle of the table on this one, probably internally, because ratings are so important to them, it pays the bills, they have this new CBA signed, they want to get these TV deals done, are probably on edge to know how this is going to turn out. And I think in a perfect world, the NFL would have just been indifferent because all they, you know, do they care about their players? I don't know. Probably not that much. They just care about making money. Let's just call a spade a spade. But now they're on the player side and they're on the anti-Donald Trump side and they're on the pro-kneeling side. And clearly, like I said, I think we all can agree there's going to be heavy kneeling come this fall. That if the ratings gets weird, it will be interesting to see how the league and the owners, because the owners will push him, if they pivot at all, will they stay with the stance? I would guess they do, and just try to help fund and get Donald out of office. Because from Drew Brees to Roger Goodell to all their players, his constant tweeting in negativity at the league is, you know, one of the things that, you know, in a perfect world, wouldn't be there. No president's going to be tweeting about how the NFL is screwing up. They just won't be, at least for the foreseeable future. But he will. And I think their worst nightmare, if all these guys keep kneeling, him getting reelected and just for the next 3 or 4 years, this constantly being a discussion. You know, and I think that's one of the great unknowns right now. And I think if you could poll the NFL league office, including Roger Goodell, which I would imagine most people would be like, oh, yeah, he's just a Republican. He desperately wants to see Donald lose and get out of office come this fall. Okay, let's dive into the NFL and the protocols that they released on Monday when it comes to the coronavirus. And I think like most businesses, regardless of where you fall, even though I do think for most of us normal human beings, it's hard to take the word social distancing that serious after the last couple weeks. But that's a whole separate discussion. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But just listen, there's still a lot of unknown about the corona. We don't have a vaccine. The NFL is coming back. Like, there is no question about that. That this is not the NBA. They're not going to twiddle their thumbs and say they're 4 months away from being 4 months away. They don't operate like that. They make a decision and they go. That's why historically, definitely in recent memory, they've taken heat for different things. And they're not always right. But they money first. But even in these unprecedented times, you have to take it. It all comes back, and just talking to people that I know that run businesses, all about litigation and, you know, CYA covering your ass in situations where if people do get sick. Obviously, the NFL does not want anyone to get sick, but they're coming back. And inevitably, some people might get sick or, you know, may, I don't even know the terms necessarily. I'm not a doctor. But in terms of, you know, the asymptomatic people, you read stuff every day that certain people can't spread. We got a lot going on right now. We do know that the NFL come training camp, though, people are going to come back. And I've said this all the time about having been in an NFL facility and working for a team, despite it being every team worth, well, I guess teams are worth different amounts, but I worked for the Eagles. They're, you know, probably one of the top 5 or 6 value team in the league. $2.5-3 billion, whatever. If you could put the top 10 NFL teams on the open, hell, the Bills went for $2 billion. You know, you can say the Niners are worth 2.5. If you put the 49ers on the open market, they would go for like 4. If you put the Eagles on the open market, they'd get 4 or 5. Like, this is not that complicated. We all get it. The protocols they put in, though, to protect themselves, there aren't that many people in a facility to begin with, but when the players come in, especially in training camp, that's 90 guys. And you usually have extra coaching interns, usually have extra training camp interns, usually have extra, assistant training interns. You just need more people. Because when the season, when you do your roster cut down, it was always amazing to be like, you'd have all these people all around, and then you do the roster cut down, and it basically got cut in half. And all the interns left, the players all got cut, and you kept, at the time it was 8 practice squad guys, now it's 10. But it's dramatically less people. And if you've never been in an NFL meeting room, a lot of the meeting rooms, quarterbacks, linebackers, tend to not be that big. Like when you think about it, when you're in high school or whatever, you go into a classroom, it's relatively big, 30, 40 people. Obviously, you get to college, you have some of the big, amphitheaters, which most teams have, because when you're addressing your whole team, you're going to have, your 60, 70 players with practice squad, all your coaches, a lot of people in there. But when you break off into meeting rooms, you go to confined spaces. And the locker room, I would imagine if you've never been in an NFL locker room, whoever team you root for through social media or through the internet or through the team's website, you've seen videos of that home locker room, get some idea of it. It's not that big. Even the big ones don't have that much extra room. The lockers may be expanded. The rules that came out, there were some that really stood out to me. That you have to have legit 6 feet of distance in meeting rooms. That the cafeteria has to be spread out. That shower, and here's the thing. If you think about during training camp, you go to practice, you're getting coached up for 2-3 hours, you're hitting, you're all sweaty. A lot of guys then either go get an immediate lift, they just take off their pads in their sweaty undershirt, or they all kind of share 3 or 4 ice baths that are like big blow-up pools that they sit in. And, listen, you ever get into an ice bath and you're sore? It works. There's a reason those guys get into it. But these protocols of using this stuff, they're going to attempt to be really strict. Now, we're still months away. A lot of information will continue to come out. Who knows? But these teams are implementing this stuff. And I think it will be difficult when it comes to ice baths, when it comes to showering, when it comes to the cafeteria. A lot of the cafeteria setup, I would say, is somewhat buffet style. It's not like you're going to the MGM Grand. It's a huge buffet. But it is like you can get, there's a sandwich station. There's your salad station. You got a couple guys on the grill to grill chicken or grill fish or, burgers or whatever. But guys are kind of just grabbing. You got, trail mix and bread. And it's there's a lot of touching. And I think it's going to have to dramatically change. I mean, the NFL claims it has to, but that's going to be difficult. Are you going to have a prepared meal for every player? Obviously, my 190-pound wide receiver is taking a lot different amount of food than my 300-pound guard or my 300-pound nose tackle. Just like my middle linebacker might be eating more than, my backup quarterback. It's going to be complicated. I think the locker room situation, attempting to not have back-to-back locker rooms, that is going to be very difficult as well. I don't know how the locker room can function like it normally does. You might have to make a separate locker room for all rookies and all undrafted free agents. Right away, that would be like 20 guys. And maybe every guy that wasn't on the team the previous year, who's not like a free agent signing. But when you just read these protocols, I start thinking, it's going to be very, very hard to execute it. It's easy to say it. It's easy to write down. Like, it's pretty easy to go, if you're in the team facility, you have to wear a mask. That was one of the things on the NFL's protocol. They also broke things down in tiers. Like the general manager, there's tier one. The players, the coaches, the trainers, the strength staff, like that whole group. Then there was a tier two to like separate people. And the GMs were, and I think the scouts were in tier two. Well, in training camp, the GMs, the scouts, your coaches, your players are all kind of intermixed. Your GM and your coach are working hand in hand. Who's doing well? Who's not doing well? Who are you going to cut? Like, those guys are together on the practice field a lot of the time, between periods. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is going to be feasible, and I get that they want to play games, and they're going to play games, but some of these protocols, and part of it is just, back to what I said, CYA have it on paper. There are going to be restricted areas. They claim in the building, places you can go and not go. Now, the good part is, a major difference with the NBA, The NBA is going to this bubble. I mean, it's still 2 months away, but they're going to this bubble. The NBA players are not used to being told what to do. They dictate the terms. They tell their coach what they want to do. They tell the coach when they want to practice. They tell their GM who they want to play with. They set the rules. The GMs don't. The coaches don't. The players do. In football, it's the complete opposite. It's like a militaristic system. And the coach, the head coach, is at the top of that food chain. He tells everyone what to do. And the players just listen. Because in football, you kind of have to. A lot more moving parts than basketball. One individual player doesn't have the same power. The way a practice works, you do just have to listen to the coach. Every day, there is a set schedule, usually, especially in training camp, that is almost every 30 minutes from 7 a.m. till 7 at night is accounted for. In training camp, it's actually later than that, probably 9 at night. And it'll be easier to execute some of these protocols, even though it's going to be difficult to figure them out because you have a confined space to begin with. Whatever you tell the players to do, once you figure out how you're going to set these protocols, to me, won't be that difficult. The players listening and following orders in terms of what your coach tells them to do about the coronavirus, whether it's masks, whether it's distancing, I actually think will be pretty easy. Now, whether they actually follow it, like if the coaches even care, that's a whole nother story. But this is the one league that is so just buttoned up when it comes to schedules, when it comes to discipline, when it comes to being told what to do and then actually doing it, that I do think has a chance. Like I think the NBA, they're going to be in a bubble in Disney World when Disney World is open, and you're going to tell LeBron James he's not allowed to leave the hotel. When's the last time LeBron James has been told to do anything? Or Russell Westbrook or James Harden? My point is more like I'm not trying to give those guys a hard time. If I'm James Harden and there are people out and about, like I ain't staying in the hotel. What are you going to do? Find me? Kick me out of the league? I got more juice than anyone in the hotel. I'm going to do what I want to do. Where football, it's just so many more people, and it just typically, when the coach tells you to do something, at least in training camp, maybe as the season goes, you might argue over plays or have a disagreement in scheme or playing time. But in training camp, it's pretty black and white. You got to be here at this time, you're there. We go here at this time, they all go. We eat at this time, everyone eats at that time. It's not that complicated. Now, I do think ultimately these organizational facilities, whether it's the Niners, whether it's Seattle, whoever you are, maybe Jerry's World is a little set up because he's got so much space. Most of these facilities have less space than you think. They're not used to housing hundreds of people. And when you factor in the space that you're going to need using these protocols, it could be a little tough. You might see some weird, weird setups, but it's what happens when you're dead set on playing football in the fall. Okay, let's dive into just some stories around the league that happened over the last couple days. Really not that many stories, why I kind of had to throw in a couple college stories. On Friday, several coaches showed up. Teams tweeted out pictures. Mike Tomlin was in the building. Andy Reid was in the building. Various other organizations showed up. Some voluntarily pushed off for a couple more weeks. Some teams, I think like the Bears, the Eagles, basically just said no one show up till training camp. Read the day, I think the LA Rams are going to come on a voluntary basis in a week. I do think the voluntary stuff with coaches is a little hard. I get there are legalities. You can't mandate them being there during these times. But to me, you either show up or you don't. I wouldn't do the it's not mandatory. You're either coming to work or you're not. That's just, to me, not a good way to operate. The reason that you do voluntary mini camps is because that's negotiated through the union, right, and through a CBA. Anyone, if you run a company, I never have, but I've worked for some, when they say, hey, you come to work today, you show up. When you say, well, it's just voluntary, come in if you want. Well, am I going to be shamed if I don't and I go hang out with my girlfriend or I go see my parents or if I work from home? Because that's kind of the problem that I think we've seen during Corona. people working from home, you can function from home. But if everyone's in the office, you're not going to get the credit. So if I was a head coach and we were showing back up, it would either be everyone has to show up. And until everyone could show up, we wouldn't show up. Now, maybe I might show up by myself, but I would tell the staff they do not have to show up. Just to make it kind of easier for everyone to follow, so we don't have people getting shamed here. Couple of the big stories over the last, I'd say, like week, but definitely the weekend, was one was Iowa football. Their strength coach, I think, goes by Coach Doyle. I'd been with Kirk Ferentz. I kind of screw up his name for a long, long time. Now, Iowa football has had a lot of success under Ferentz. Let's just say Kirk. Done a really good job. They've won a lot of games. They've produced a lot of pros. They were just in the Rose Bowl a couple years ago against Stanford. It's been very, very successful. Well, it over the weekend got kind of ugly. A lot of players coming out saying things like, this program is pro-white guy and kind of anti-black guy. This program is very, very hard on black guys in the weight room. And the head coach had kind of released a statement. There's a big difference between holding guys to a high standard and being on guys than being demeaning. And I think sometimes it's a very slippery slope in these situations in a weight room, specifically when it comes to football. Because when it comes to the weight room in football, it's a huge part of the sport. Much, much more than basically every other sport. Right? It's you can't play the majority of positions without dedicating yourself to the weight room, you know, 8 to 9 months a year. And it's not always fun. You're pushing around heavy, heavy weights and you're getting yelled at. And there is a fine line, right, where you're pushing a guy and you're on a guy and you're even giving the guy a hard time and kind of crossing the line. And I'm not shocked to see these situations come out. I would imagine we see more and more of them as players become empowered to speak. And it'll be fascinating to me if a prominent player who's in the NFL comes out against one of their coaches or one of their programs and says things that were said to him. They're just going to be offensive things that are said in the sport of football, in the coaching of football, and there is a fine line between, like, even when I say offensive might be too strong a word, things that could definitely be deemed as offensive that would not be said in the insurance office, that would not be said in, you know, in a car dealership. Things are just going to be said in a weight room that are going to be, whoa, if you take them out of context. And then there are going to be things that are said that are just plain wrong, that the guy would just might just be a racist. I don't know. I know that term gets thrown around a lot right now, being a racist. And I've always thought when it comes to social media and some of the stuff, I've struggled. I don't do well with that because I think if people get labeled, and it's just, I'm not comfortable saying one guy is or one guy isn't when I don't know him. I've never been around him. But the Iowa situation feels like it's got a chance to be a little ugly. Here's the other thing with Iowa I read. The head coach had a mandate on all their players. They weren't allowed to tweet. Well, once the blowback came, now they're allowed one tweet, I guess, a month. It's just like, what is going on here? Now, I'd say this. Iowa football is good. So whatever he's doing does work. And I think sometimes things that make people a little uncomfortable on the outside work for that program. Now, do you have to adapt? You got to get with the times. Can you not allow your players to tweet in 2020, especially when you have a lot of black players and everything that's going on with Black Lives Matter? Feels, you know, a little overkill, I'd say mildly. But, like, who am I to say? That head coach had a lot of success. He kind of knows what he's doing. Not really my style. And it doesn't feel like it's the next guy we're going to talk about, Dabo Swinney, who's taken a lot of heat for kind of being silent during this period of time. And I know he wore a Football Matters t-shirt. I think over the weekend, someone tweeted it out, took a picture. It kind of went viral. Listen, I am not very religious, and I know people in the South clearly are. So I try to do this with everything, put myself in other shoes. I would say I'm pretty agnostic, though if you're really religious, I respect it. I mean, we don't all have to, you might think I'm crazy. We all think differently. And clearly a big part of Dabo is God. And it's something that really thrives in the South. They talk about God, he talks about God, in the SEC, it's a big deal. In the Pac-12, we don't talk about it like that out here. If you were like the head coach at USC or Oregon and were kind of talking like Dabo, people look at you a little weird. Now, if you won like Dabo, people wouldn't care. You talk however you wanted. But in the South, that's just kind of, to me, the price of admission, talking like that. And then if you win, it's just a double whammy. But I think Dabo's been a little out of touch on this deal, wearing that shirt. And listen, I know Trevor Lawrence was tweeting that the football matters. He'd been wearing that shirt forever. But this is the same thing back to Drew Brees. And I think sometimes when you're so rich and you're so powerful, I think you can just naturally lose touch. It's just, especially in an off season when you're not around other people. Like, humans, we're not meant to be doing this. Be isolated from the people we work with. If you're a coach, from your team. This is not normal. While some people in the media celebrate this, most of us don't want this. They would like to be around their team. But when you're Drew Brees, when you're Dabo, and you have an unlimited amount of money, and you're just hanging out with your family for three straight months, maybe you're just not quite locked into what's really going on in the real world. In your 15,000 square foot house, you got second homes, you're flying private to go vacation. I mean, most of us, you know, we go to the grocery store, we check into United. We don't have that much, you know, square footage isn't that big for all of us. So I think you see sometimes, like, come on, guys. Let's pull our head out of our rear end and let's get a feel for society right now. And I think Dabo feels a little, and Dabo has had an incredible run. I'd say beside Nick Saban, it's one of the truly, you know, impressive runs we've seen in the last decade, two decades. He's beat Nick Saban now multiple times, right? He's big time. He's probably, if you factor in age, he's probably the number one, because what does Nick have, a year or two left? I mean, Dabo's in the peak of his powers. Probably the number one coach in all of college football. But, you know, a little more, and then he had an issue where a coach had used the N-word. Just been a rough little quarantine period for a couple weeks for the Clemson program and obviously the Iowa program. Sometimes these football programs, the head coach has so much power. He lives in this little bubble because no one can really say anything to him. Like in the NFL, you have a GM, you have an owner, there's some balance. Like the head coaches, like Kirk and Dabo, they're more powerful than the AD. They're more powerful than everyone. They're at the top of the pyramid. You think Nick Saban takes orders from the AD? Hell no. It's the opposite. He tells the AD what to do. That's not the way it works in the NFL. If the owner wants something to happen, the head coach listens. The general manager listens. The general manager and the head coach balance each other out. Hell, the players have a lot more juice, especially your good ones. They can balance everyone out. There's more balance. College football, there's no balance. Now, when you get the right coach in Saban and Dabo in Urban, it just works. Like, they set the tone. They do everything. But sometimes when times get weird, if they're not quite up with what's going on, they can look like an idiot fast. Breaking news of Monday, Dalvin Cook, the star running back for the Minnesota Vikings, coming off a career year. Excellent player. I mean, an ideal zone runner. Fast, physical. Just a stud. I mean, a legitimate starting top five or six back in the league on, you know, one of the better teams in the NFL. Says he will not show up to training camp. He will not be anywhere to be found until he gets a new deal. This is tough because he's clearly one of their better players. They drafted him in the second round, so they haven't really paid him that much money. He's already had a major injury since he entered the NFL. An ACL. I think, was it his rookie season? Might have been last year. Regardless, like he tore his ACL in the NFL. I think it was last year, so it was 2 years ago. And like, what are you doing? Am I giving this guy a Christian McCaffrey contract? I would hesitate doing that. Now, I saw some people tweeting, well, Melvin Gordon, Le'Veon Bell. Like, I think this team, I don't know anything about this guy's character, but they view him as a core piece of their operation. What are you paying him? Like, I'm not giving him Zeke money, but he's going to want $40 to $50 million. Could I get him signed for $30 million, which essentially is just be a three-year contract, right? He's got 1 year left on his deal and then 2 years kind of an extension, basically like 15 a year. So 3 years, $45 million guaranteed, like 35 of it. Do something like that. It's clearly complicated because You don't want to be in the business of paying big money to running backs. We've seen it. It doesn't work. It is a risky proposition with the upside by no means balances out the downside, because the downside is massive. And I think when the dust settles, I think Minnesota is going to have a little bit of a problem on their hands, because they need this guy to win. Cousins need this guy to function. Their offense kind of revolves around him. But there has to be a price point and a number in which you feel comfortable before you just break Dalvin Cook off. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram handle. And fire your questions away. Also got, for those of you guys that like playing, got a little DraftKings game going for the golf this weekend. I got a link in the bio of my Instagram if you guys like doing a little daily fantasy golf. It's fun. Trust me. But let's start with the first question. The Green Bay Packers signed a buddy of mine out of Montreal University. Marc Anthony Ducroix, is a Caucasian DB. I like Caucasian DB. That ran the 40 in 4.35 at his combine while being sick. Give me all the measurables, 6'3", 198. Which leads me to my next question. Is there any way that the Packers use him as a wide receiver instead of a DB because of his physical attributes? Among all the DBs that went in the combine prior to this draft, he wouldn't even rank first in the three-cone drill. He would have ranked first in the three-cone drill, third overall in the 40, and sixth best in the shuffle. I think the Packers have a long history of signing guys as undrafted free agents, and that's what I think this guy was. Yeah, of just physical freaks. They like height, weight, speed. So your buddy, 6'3", 200 pounds, he can run, and I just think you bring him to camp and you work with him at different positions. Now, this year, for a guy like this, becomes a little more difficult. You know, you're not going to be, you don't get the off season. They don't get to try you out at different positions. Once the team reconvenes, whenever training camp starts, you got to get everyone on the same page to start playing games. So it's going to be difficult for some of these undrafted free agents to kind of get in the mix, just because time is not necessarily going to be on their side. But I think the Packers just have a long history of taking guys with really, really good measurables. Does holding out help or hurt Dalvin Cook? It didn't work for Le'Veon Bell or Melvin Gordon, but then again, the Vikes need him more on their offense than the other teams' rosters do. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance. I think Melvin Gordon clearly was just a replaceable player, and he wanted way too much money, ended up not getting that much for the Broncos. Le'Veon, they truly liked Le'Veon as the player. I think the person, he had been in trouble, he had been suspended, he had had a major injury. You know, clearly he wasn't anywhere near Antonio Brown in terms of being a pain, but I don't think they were sold on the guy giving him all that cash, and part of it is just good business as a running back, because I'd say Le'Veon in his peak has been better than Dalvin. Now, Dalvin's, if I was ranking him, I'd go Le'Veon, Dalvin, Melvin, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Dalvin Cook has a chance to be better than Le'Veon. Now, Le'Veon had some really good seasons. But Dalvin, I'd put Dalvin Cook in the Le'Veon category. Like, he can be that elite of a player. I would not put Melvin Gordon in there. So I just think it becomes complicated how much you pay running backs. But you're right. They are, you know, just more dependent on Dalvin Cook. Me and my friends were having an argument the other day on what was more important to a rookie quarterback. I think that having more weapons at the skill positions to help develop a quarterback faster, but he thinks it's more important piece for a rookie quarterback is a solid offensive line. If you had to give your young quarterback weapons or an O-line, which would be more beneficial? I would probably start with the offensive line, because if he's protected, then he can just make some plays. If you have really good weapons and you're running for your life, you're screwed. Now, it depends what type quarterback I have. If I have a Kyler Murray, a Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, a guy that's really, really athletic, Deshaun Watson, maybe I take my chances with elite skill guys. But if my guy is more of a Jared Goff, all the older quarterbacks, you know, the Rivers, the Roethlisberger could move, but the last 5 or 6 years, he's not really moving. Brady, Manning, guys like that, you would choose offensive line for sure. You know, in a perfect world, you clearly want both. I think you got to protect the guy. Now, if you don't have either, you get like Sam Darnold, right? You just have a disaster, and that's not what you want. You want to protect the player. I'm trying to think of an example. I think the offensive line, you'd definitely want an offensive line. Love the pod. From what history has shown us, do you think there is any chance the Patriots could have a sneaky stellar season and find themselves in the Super Bowl again? Even with a depleted roster, if any coach can somehow find a way to capitalize on the situation that the coronavirus pandemic has presented, it's got to be Belichick. What are your thoughts? I would say never, but depending on Brian Hoyer / Jared Stidham, to me, enables them, or I guess will limit their ability to make a Super Bowl run. Now, could they still win the division? Yes. Their defense is going to be good. They have great coaching staff. You're right. Belichick, if anyone's going to pivot, but they could barely beat Mahomes when they had Brady and Gronk. Now they're going to beat him. Like, they're going to be able to outscore Lamar Jackson. You know, the Buffalo Bills, last year Brady had some big moments in that Patriot game, especially the home game. I don't know. I think it'll be tough. Now, I think they'll compete to make a wild card. And I think they're going to be, you know, when the dust settles, they're going to be right in the wild card mix come almost at Friday, come December. Super Bowl, I can't see that, though. Can you imagine if Belichick were to win the Super Bowl with Jared Stidham? There would be, or just got to the Super Bowl. I'd say if he got to the AFC Championship game with Jared Stidham, it'd be one of the most remarkable accomplishments we've ever seen in professional sports. Because, like, if Brady gets there with Tampa, you'd go, yeah, it was impressive, but Bruce Arians had success. They got stud players. Tom is the GOAT. You'd get it. I think most people are saying, yeah, I bet Belichick might not even make the playoffs. What's your take on sports memorabilia? If you could pick one iconic piece of sports history for your personal collection, what would it be? I'm not a big sports memorabilia guy. I have a framed picture of Michael Jordan that my uncle got signed. He played golf with him in the 90s. As you watched on The Last Dance, Jordan played golf with anybody. I got a couple pictures, one of Pebble Beach and one of Augusta behind me. That's about it. I mean, I got a picture of Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, the golfer, that my dad used to fish with this guy who knew him, and he signed it for me, but my mom put it in front of the sun, and the sun, he also fished with Nick Faldo, got that signed as well. You can still see that. You can't see the Golden Bears. So, yeah, I mean, those were free, you know? I wouldn't pay for things, though I understand people that do. If I could have one piece of sports memorabilia, you know, maybe like a Brady Super Bowl jersey, a Montana Super Bowl jersey, maybe like a picture of Tiger Woods winning, you know, the 2019 Masters sign, something like that. I just like frame pictures that look cool to go in my room. Now, the Babe Ruth baseball, something like that would be pretty freaking cool. Or like a Vince Lombardi, something with Vince Lombardi. I'd say Babe or Muhammad Ali, like signed gloves would be pretty badass. I mean, there are a lot of options. Mickey Mantle, like a signed bat. Do you think the Lions have a shot for a turnaround season similar to the Niners a year ago? While I have the doubts about the stability of the Lions organization and Matt Patricia, both teams had parallels, including their starting quarterback missing the majority of the previous season, had a top three draft pick, and had coaching continuity coming into the season. Well, true on that. Here's what I'd say is the difference. If I gave every single person listening the opportunity to hire a coach, offense, defense, head coach, whatever, and I gave you two humans, one was Kyle Shanahan, even before last year, I said Kyle Shanahan or Matt Patricia. Every single human listening to this, including Justin, who asked me this question, would take Kyle Shanahan. I think the coach is dramatically better than Patricia. The players like him. Patricia's like making them practice outside when they're playing in a dome. Feels a little lost. The top three pick. So you got Okuda. If Okuda turns into a star, I'm talking about a superstar. Year one, Pro Bowl, all pro level guy. Nick Bosa was elite as a rookie. Here's what else the 49ers had. They had an elite defense last year, and their pass rush was dominant. Is the Lions' pass rush that good? They had Bosa, they had Armstead, they had Buckner, and they got a little bit of D Ford. They had the best running game, or one of them, in the league. I guess Lamar Jackson, the Ravens did, but I think they were top three or four rushing team in the league. Now, the Lions' passing attack, I'd say the last handful of years when Stafford was on the field, or, you know, right when they had Golden Tate, when they had Marvin Jones, they've had other dudes that were legit. I mean, they can, you know, they had, I guess Ebron didn't really do that much there, but they could always score throwing the football. They were potent a couple of years ago. I don't know if the balance is going to be there. So I don't see the parallels, to be honest with you. Bro, I'm listening to 3 and Out and hearing you talk about your AC being out. Home Depot has window units that just plug into the wall, not too expensive, LOL. I probably need to get one of those. I was supposed to have I had to get a new motor. They were supposed to install it today. Of course, it hadn't showed up. Coronavirus, I don't know. And luckily, it wasn't that hot today. It was cold all weekend, so I've trapped the coolness in my place. So it's like 90 degrees. Or excuse me, it's like 70 degrees in my place. It feels fine. But the heat's coming the next couple days. Now, I may or may not be going down to play, you know, Spyglass on Wednesday. So that's supposed to be the hot day. I'll be out playing a little golf, you know. But other than that, last I talked to the guy earlier today, Friday. What are you going to do? I actually need to call the guy. I'm a Marine war veteran and wanted to say thank you for your words on Memorial Day. I listened to many podcasts, and you were the only one to remind everyone that it was Memorial Day is actually about. Thank you for my question. Why is it so hard for the NFL to find accurate kickers? Because, and I'm very pro-military, which feels weird. Everything gets so splintered right now with everything that's going on in the country. Like, you can be all-encompassing, which I feel I am. But I think there's a lot of kickers. The accuracy doesn't translate from college to the pros. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, we see guys, elite players get drafted. The other thing is, kicking is not as much about talent. Like, once you're one of the top kickers in college, you have the talent. It's so mental. To me, it's like golf. It's like hitting in baseball. If you lose your confidence, and the unlike kicking and hitting in baseball, you're not going to get an unlimited at-bats if you're a good player. You're going to start missing kicks. You're going to cost the team games. Because in the NFL, the games are determined, even when good teams play bad teams, there aren't that many blowouts in the league. You're in a lot of games. So if your kicker misses two or three field goals and you lose by eight, you're like, Jesus, he hits those three, we win. It happened to the kid in Tampa Bay, and it can just snowball on a player so fast. Like, most kickers have that. Once you get drafted, you have the talent. Then it's just mentally. Can you not go into the tank when you miss a couple kicks? A lot of guys can't. Who in your mind has the best quarterbacks based on division? Do you think you could rank them from best to worst? That's a good question. I would say off the top of my head, I mean, it'd probably be the NFC West. You have Russell Wilson, who's, you know, probably the second best quarterback in the league. You have Jimmy Garoppolo and Jared Goff. I mean, everyone's shitting on Jared Goff. He's had a pretty good career these last 3 years. Check the numbers. Jimmy was a top 12 quarterback, and Kyler Murray's one of the most exciting young players. If I'm just off the top of my head, Rodgers, Stafford, Kirk Cousins, not bad. Wentz, Dak, who else? The Redskins and Daniel Jones, probably not. You got Breeze, Brady, Matt Ryan. That's pretty damn good. That's actually really good. It's hard to do off the top of my head. I'd say the AFC West, Carr, Drew Locke, probably not. We don't know the Chargers. And Mahomes is like sweet, but I don't. The other three guys, I mean, Carr's been up and down. Drew Locke, who knows? That's a good question. Maybe I'll have to dive into that a little later. Been wanting to DM you for a while, but just kept pushing it off. Great podcast, really is. Any chance to bump it to three times a week? Maybe this fall, we'll see. Now for the real question. I've been thinking how the NFC has been more dominant than the AFC for some time now. Just thinking it out of left field, wouldn't it be kind of a cool, crazy idea if they swap teams in the conferences, keep East and East, West and West, but swap the NFC to the AFC, vice versa? I know it would never happen, but don't you think it would be one hell of a ride? So like you just would randomly put the AFC West would become the NFC West, and the AFC West or the NFC West would become the AFC West, and just do a couple of those. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that they already kind of do intermix. The great part about football is you play your division twice, you play one other division in your conference, and then you always play another division in the other conference. So you have so much intermix conference, you know, to conference. You get a lot of NFC and AFC games throughout the year. I really don't think you need to do that. I think part of it has just been the coaching's been a little bit better top to bottom in the NFC. The star quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, now been dominating in the NFC for a while. I mean, the 49ers have had some good teams over the decade. The Rams, once McVay showed up, you know, the Eagles have consistently been pretty good. You've had Drew Brees, Matt Ryan to go with Russell and Aaron Rodgers. I think it's just kind of a quarterback thing. It really is, just kind of off the top of my head. The NFC East, the NFC South, the NFC North. Yeah. Just listen to your most recent episode, and your bit about Nick Foles coming to the Bears, and notice that as a Bears fans that dominated much of the media cycle surrounding the team. One thing that I really think is going under the radar is the additions to an already arguably elite defense. Leonard Floyd was an obvious bust, and now we're bringing in someone with a pass rushing acumen of Robert Quinn. Additionally, we drafted Jalen Johnson to replace Prince Amukamara, who was noticeably aging. I think these two additions to an already powerhouse unit can catapult them to a top three, probably top one defense in the league. Thoughts? Yeah, I think their defense should be better than last year. I thought Khalil underachieved, and I think he was banged up. You had Roquan and Danny Trevathan get injured at different times. But when those two guys are healthy, with Khalil, with Akeem Hicks, with Robert Quinn, with Eddie Jackson, with Fuller, Jalen Johnson was a really good player at Utah, tall, long corner, fits what Chuck's looking for. They have the talent to be a really, really good defense. To me, their defense last year, while it wasn't as good as the previous year with Fangio, was not the problem. I mean, their problem last year was Mitch Trubisky. So if they get better quarterback play, they got a chance. What are your thoughts on the Broncos this year? Have a friend that's a huge Broncos fan, and he is talking a ton of shit about how good they're going to be. This friend wants me to bet $1,000 that the Broncos will win 10 games this year. Vegas has their win total at 7.5, which leans me to taking the bet. Uncle Colin is super high on the Broncos and makes some valid points that have me pumping the brakes. What are your thoughts? Do I take the bet? I think that they win above 7.5. Now, do they win 10? They won 7 last year. They're betting, to me, if they're going to be a 10-win team, you're basically just going to say, Drew Lock's really good. Or it just has a really good season. The numbers might not bear it out because they're going to be a run-heavy team. But they added Jerry Jeudy. They drafted the little guy from Penn State. They got Fant. They have a defensive head coach. They add Pat Shurmur. Listen, I can't make some definitive statement about Drew Lock, though the little bit you watch of him, he looked really good. And I'm very high on Fangio. Their defense is going to be good. You get Bradley Chubb back off the ACL. I don't think it's crazy to say that the Broncos have a good, you know, win 10 games and make the wild card. Due to the pandemic, there's been speculation that the CFL could potentially fold if they do not play this season. What is your opinion on if the NFL were to acquire 4 or 5 franchises, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary? I know this seems outlandish due to the weather, their government, and the fact that it would take some time to build 4 to 5 new rosters of NFL talent. But if the NFL does intend on expanding one day, it seems it would be easier to expand with teams that already have stadiums, built-in fan bases, and their own prior histories. My final comment is some Canadians already feel that once the NFL ultimately moves to Toronto, the CFL will become obsolete at that time. That's a good question. I can't speak on if they move to Toronto, if that's inevitable or not. I don't think it is a lock to be inevitable that they end up in Toronto, but maybe I'm naive. I think there is zero chance of them buying five Canadian franchises. Zero. I mean, none. I don't know anything. Just my initial gut when I read that was like, I can't see them purchasing the Canadian teams in the Canadian Football League. Now, you're probably right. There would be some built-in advantages. They have stadiums. They have fan bases. I'd have to, you know, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan. How big are these cities? I'd have to Google them all. You know, the NFL is not in the business of expanding into smaller markets, right? They went to L.A. The only reason they left the Bay Area for Vegas, which is a smaller market, was just you got a free stadium, and Vegas is an expanding market. But I think market size is really, really big. That's why Toronto would make sense. I don't know about the other teams. People keep talking about the Broncos offense and how it is loaded now this offseason. But what do you think about their defense? Do they have the guys and the schemes to be a top 10 defense? Well, like I said, you get Bradley Chubb back. You put him with Von Miller. You immediately get one of the better pass rushing duos in the league, in theory, if Chubb's healthy. He was really good as a rookie. I mean, Vaughn's a stud. You have that safety that's one of the better players in the league in Simmons. You just have one of the best defensive minds in football. So if Vic Fangio's coaching your guys and you got pass rushers, you're going to be good. It's really that simple. If you got pass rushers for Fangio, your defense is going to be good. He makes average corners be good. He doesn't need star corners. He's got a star safety, and he's got a good defensive line. So I think they could be a top 10 defense for sure. Their success is going to come down to the quarterback, who, you know, I don't know that much about. I watched him on a Q&A thing with Baker Mayfield on Instagram. He's pretty likable. I know in the Black Lives Matter protest in Denver that I think, I forget who put it together, but Vaughn, and he was there, and they had 50 guys. Like that, to me, that was one thing that stood out. 50 guys on the team showed up, and the coaching staff. Maybe they got a pretty good thing going unity-wise as a group, as a unit, as a team. Kind of feels like they like each other. So I'm bullish on the Denver Broncos this year for sure. Appreciate everyone listening. And just keep chugging along in 2020. And share with your friends. Tell people about the podcast. If you haven't already, leave a little review on the Apple iTunes. And have a great week. Talk to you Friday. See you.